from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Royteam.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on the G and Ursula Show. This is our third hour today, and coming up later in the hour, right after Heather's 11:30 newscast, we are just learning right now that Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan has extended the eviction moratorium. Hannah Scott is getting more details on that. She's also going to talk to us about this latest plan to get the homeless into shelter and the big bucks that is going into that effort. And we're going to get into all those details coming up again at 11:33. But right now, G is off. Dres is in today. And Dres and I are going to do Agree to Disagree, brought to you by Johnny Tsunami.
One of these days, we just got to take off the gloves. Just really go at it.
Dres, I'm going to start off asking you this first question here. Kind of an eye-popping survey that was done by The Motley Fool among 2,000 high-net-worth individuals, so folks who have assets, and liquid assets, actually, over $1 million. We're not just talking about their homes. And about 70% of millionaires say they are worried about leaving, quote, too much money to their children. Dres, is this a real problem, leaving too much money to your kids?
This is absolutely not a problem at all. This is a rich problem. You know how they say first world problems? This is not even first world problems. This is the air up there problems, right? I don't know what type of problems these are. I wish my dad had these types of problems. But no, not a problem. The real problem here with the rich is learn how to educate your children. What they're saying is I'm going to leave my kid too much money and they're going to blow it or they're not going to do. Well, what were you doing all these years? Educate them, train them, let them carry on your legacy and continue to build on what they care about and what you have cared about in your life and to give to causes and grow that wealth so they can do more good. Tell me you agree with me, Ursula.
Sorry, I'm going to disagree with you. Okay, it's not a problem for you or me. I will never understand that as well. That's not something that I'm anticipating at any point in time. However, I like what Bill Gates did, especially before we've learned about these more recent problems. But I like what Bill Gates did in terms of what he decided that he was going to do with his wealth. He determined that he was going to give away, wasn't it like 99%, 98%, 99%? The kids get more than enough money, more money than they're ever going to need. But it doesn't stop them from doing something with that money and then building their own wealth. And again, I'm not trying to tell people how to do what with their money, but in this case, I see value to that because at some point it is too much. And you do get those cases where, it is squandered and that money right now could be done to used, like in the case of the people, whether it's Warren Buffett or others who have joined in on that whole thing where you can help actually eradicate problems around the world and in your own country. I hear you sighing.
I'm so disappointed. I'd be so mad at my dad. You're sitting on $20 billion and you're leaving me $10 mil? Come on, Dad. Are you kidding? $10 million is very easily blowable and you don't even have to be an idiot. You're just going to blow $10 million. Pops,
Why I wouldn't be giving you $50 million, because if you can blow $10 million like nothing, you can probably blow $50 million like nothing.
My name is Bill. Leave me a billion. Just leave me a bill, Dad. Just leave me a billion.
I gotta say I agree with you, Dres, but for a different reason. I'm gonna go back to what I said. Why is there this assumption that one needs to have their own job in order to be a fulfilled, successful individual and human being and a participating member of society? Like, the whole premise of leaving your kids too much money is that they won't have to work. So what? Like,
okay,
oh
I'm
my
go
gosh,
back
my,
to our
my daughter
oh
might
my
be
gosh.
Able to be a stay-at-home mom. Yep. My son might yep. be able to just volunteer at, you know, preschools. Or, you know what? He loves taking care of the environment, so he's going to work on the Sierra. What is wrong with that?
So you're trying to tell me that...
Let the church say amen. Go ahead, preach.
I know, I'm probably on the losing end of this. But you're trying to tell me, let's go back to our discussion during the scenarios.
Yeah.
So again, Dre's, you said, yeah, why would that those parents allow that adult to continue just basically sucking the money out of them? And it yes. is not a motivator. And for his own personal growth, you said he
That's
should
right.
go out and work. So
yeah,
I'm not trying to be.
No, I said contribute. I was very clear. I said it's not about jobs. It's about contribute. Here, I said earlier about the rich person. I said educate your child what to do with
well,
the
that
money,
I agree with.
And they can contribute, right?
That
they don't
I agree
have
with.
To work a job. To me, I totally right now, if I had $30 billion, I'm leaving it to my daughter. I'm educating with her what to do with it. And everything I was already doing, my hope is that she will extend that and go on to be greater than me. But the idea, I'm with you, Chef. The fact that she needs to work a job, no. But she needs to contribute. She needs to be busy doing something.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around $10 million is nothing. I'm telling you what.
No.
I'm telling you
nothing.
What. Someone gives me $10 million. And I also do
nothing.
Understand that I was being hypocritical when I said, don't tell. I don't want to tell people what to do with their money. And then I'm exactly telling people what to do with their money.
Dre, speaking of air up their problems, for this next story, we go to the Netherlands, which is the tallest country in the world, where men, on average, are 6 feet tall, women are 5 feet six. But inexplicably, and no one really knows why, the Netherlands is shrinking, at least on average. So for the first time in recorded history, the average person is actually getting slightly shorter over time. So Ursula, you brought this up. I got to ask you first. Does height really matter?
I have to just share. When I brought this up in the morning meeting, both Dre's and Chef looked at me like, really? What was your reaction to that
question? You have to explain that because people can't see how tall Dre's and I are on the radio.
Chef, how tall are you?
5'6".
See, it doesn't matter to me. I think if you was a, you know, tall person. Because and Dre's, how tall are you?
Oh, my gosh. This is, you're blowing this up. I'm an inch shorter than Chef. It's even worse.
Okay. Should height matter? Absolutely not. And in fact, although I know it does for many women, and I think they're missing out on a lot of really cool guys who are shorter. One of my favorite couples.
Because they're just looking over the top of them and can't see them.
I think that there's this idea that your partner, your husband, needs to be taller than you. Or I think women like men to be taller than them, so they don't feel bigger than the guy. I think, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but I know that that's how the thinking used to be in the dating days. You said that some people still put a height
Oh, yeah.
Requirement.
Back in my dating days, there's a significant number of women that put 6 feet or over only, please, or 5'10 or over.
That's too bad. I mean, that's unfortunate.
I know. And it's just really insensitive. Apparently, when I put a weight requirement, I did not do that.
Right? Okay.
I'm going the opposite direction. I don't care. I know I'm with Chef and Napoleon and all of the short men of the world who, you know, big things come in small packages and all of that other jargon, right? To me, you like what you like. Ladies, if you like them tall, go tall. I'm not tripping. You know what I mean? I'll have my fair share, right? And honestly, I'm married, so I'm fine. I found one who was good with it. Yes, in high heels, she's a wee bit taller than me, but we make do. But you like what you like. I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with people liking what they like. It's not discrimination. It is a preference. It is an attraction. It is what I want. It is what I like. And if I am on a dating app where I can eliminate people without actually having to say to you, leave me alone, you saw 5'10 and above. If you come in here and you're Dre's or Chef's height, the answer is no. Okay, so you like what you like.
You must be this tall too.
Let's get it, do some truth telling here too. When you write your height, do you always add about an inch?
Half. I'm actually 5'5"
You know what? Now I think you're short shaming us. You are short shaming us.
It's like me. I usually take off at least 10 pounds.
No. Ursula is taking shots.
No. I'm not. No. I think it's generally. I think that I probably am back down to 5'7", but I think I still write 5'8". You know, my driver's license still says 5'8". I know I have shrunk.
Okay, in all seriousness, though, we're asking if height matters, and I think fundamentally it does. And I'm not just talking from a relationship perspective, but just looking at income potential. So there are studies that show that for both men and women, a 1-inch increase in height is associated with an average of 1.4 to about 3% increase in weekly earnings. So tall people make more money. They're seen as more authoritative. There are also studies that show the more weight that you have on your body, the less money that you make, the less open people are to hiring you, etc. So I think there are all kinds of perception biases that we have about others in our society, and height is certainly one of them.
Weight is certainly another one of them.
Yes.
No
yes.
Now, was it broke? No wonder I didn't know what it was. Now I know. Sheesh.
I think what we're learning is that Dre's, you'll never have the opportunity to leave that $30 billion to your daughter. Let's move on to DoorDash. They're going to start offering alcohol deliveries in 20 states and D.C. Dre's, I got to ask, there are kind of two ways you can see this, at least in my mind. And that is, one, it's great because, you know, like Uber, it gives drunk people the opportunity to keep drinking without actually getting in their cars to go out and buy that booze. Or it's kind of bad because it basically just offers another way for people to get alcohol into their house, which they would not have had the opportunity to do otherwise. Do you think this is a good thing or a bad thing?
This is awesome. Look, if somebody wants to drink, they're going to drink. The idea that, this is going to allow them to get the alcohol easier. If they have the money, they're going to get the alcohol if they want it. This is awesome. You're bringing it to people. The other day I was watching the Seahawks game. I'm at a bar and my allergies started flaring up on me. And my wife's like, you know what? Let's just Postmate some allergy medicine. And the guy comes bringing it in right into the bar. I grab my thing, pop my pills, and keep watching the Hawks game. I love this. Same thing with drinks. If I want it, I want to have it. I want it now. There's so much bad going on in the middle of this pandemic. You mean I can have a drink brought to me? I love this. There's zero bad about it, and I'm confident that Ursula's going to agree with me. Tell him, Ursula.
I'm actually going to agree with you. Yeah. Now that the way you just presented that, you're absolutely correct. I personally wouldn't. First of all, I'm not a big drinker, but just to me, I have a hard time paying that amount of money. But you are paying for a convenience, and then in this case, I'd rather you have someone who is not drinking bring you the drinks than you go out after drinking and realize that maybe you want some more, that you don't get in your car and endanger yourself or other people. So I actually think this is a brilliant idea.
I'm going to go a third direction and say that this is crazy. Like, how fundamentally lazy are we as a society that we need literally everything brought to our doorsteps at the snap of a finger? And Dre's, I've never used Postmates. I've never used DoorDash or Uber Eats or anything like that. How much does it cost to have a bottle of allergy medicine delivered to a bar?
You know what's so funny is I have absolutely no idea. I looked at my wife. She proposed the idea. I was like, can we do that? She's like, yes. I'm just, well, let's do it. Like this. And as soon as it was done, and I reject the notion of being lazy. I call it preoccupied. Yeah. And because I was preoccupied with the Seahawks, the air up there, and when he brought me that, I couldn't believe it, dude. It was like a whole new world. It's like, in my brain. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, you can't put a price on that experience that you're having with your wife. You're enjoying yourself, and then you don't have to leave. So your time and your energy, all that kind of stuff also factors in. So some people are willing to pay that, and it's probably good that you didn't see the bill because that might have been the one and only time you did that.
All right, I'm just going to throw a total wild card at you because there are two stories I've been kind of sitting on. And I've been trying to figure out a way to bring them up. So I'm just going to shock you, Ursula. We've heard about the school bus driver shortage that's reaching all across the nation. Seattle school buses have been consistently 1 to 2 hours late in some areas. In Massachusetts, they seem to have a handle on this in a way that no other state does. Their creative problem solving, shall we call it, it's really reaching new dimensions. So in one case, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker, he actually called up 500 members of the National Guard, so National Guard members who drive convoy, etc., to hop on the school buses and get the kids to school. In another circumstance, there was one school who hired a party bus complete with stripper poles because there were no bus drivers who could drive the school buses, so they figured, you know, we'll go with a private transport company. Why not the party bus? Dre's, I got to ask, what's a better way to get to school? On the party bus or with one of those soldiers riding up front the whole way?
Listen, it depends on who you're asking. If you're asking 16, 17-year-old Dre's, sign me up for the party bus. But if you're asking Dre's the dad, go with the soldiers. But this is hilarious. With the stripper poles inside of them, oh my gosh, yeah, sign me up.
The party bus company has very clean, very strict cleaning protocols with COVID, apparently, by the way. Just want to let that.
Yeah, sign me up for the party bus. What about you, Ursula?
I would absolutely love to go with National Guard because I would love to see them in action and I'd like to be able to thank them in person. It's amazing just during the pandemic how much you realize they can fill so many different roles, which I think is awesome. That all said, I got to share a story about the party bus. My girlfriend Tracy invited me to her husband's, Mark's big 60th birthday. Actually, this is a couple years ago, 60th birthday, and she hired one of
I'm rubbing my hands already.
I love this. I love
she hired, she, she, we went to different restaurants and bars with that bus. There were no strippers. There were no nothing. It was just the party in that bus, but it happened to be a bus. And I'm going to tell you, I mean, Tracy does not do anything less than first class. However, this bus that she found, first of all, they had the driver had to keep like banging the boombox to make it like play the music. The door, okay, so there were two poles. The doors were shut with rope. And we were turning and her husband had had a little bit to drink. And again, no stripper. This is just us in the party. And I just remember as the bus was making a turn, those doors with the rope that were kind of loosely tied go swinging. And I'm seeing her husband. I'm thinking, this is going to be a news story. And I am grabbing him to keep him from flying out of the bus. So whenever I hear of one of those party buses, that's what pops into my head. So I'm not thinking that that would be a good way for the kids to go.
I love this story. I'm just disappointed. I'm disappointed in you guys, Ursula. No,
why is that?
I mean,
no.
I'd have thought you guys would have turned the
not,
party
that's not,
up.
That's not their style.
That's totally
not my
your
style.
Vibe, right?
No. Okay, still ahead. We're going to get a lot more serious. We're going to be talking about the homelessness crisis, what's the latest on that, and the newest details on the eviction moratorium. You are listening to the G and Ursula Show. It is 11:35. You are listening to the G and Ursula Show. G is off today. Dre's is in. And we talked about the homelessness crisis in our first hour of the show today. And we mentioned that the city of Seattle and the state are teaming up and spending another $50 million to buy 3 brand new buildings to house the homeless. And we've invited Hannah Scott to join us now to talk about that, but also some breaking news. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning.
So let's start with the new developments right now. You texted me that Mayor Durkin has decided something on the moratorium.
Yes, she has extended it into 2022, as you just heard in Heather's newscast. It'll be extended through January 15th of 2022, along with the utility protections that have been in place in the city of Seattle as well. So there was a lot of people waiting to hear how this might go down. Really not as much noise about this eviction moratorium expiring as we had seen in the last one at the end of June. But I started hearing some concerns from some of the usual folks who voiced their concerns to the governor and the mayor, because the rental assistance programs that are getting the money from the federal government are still not all the way up to speed in putting that money out, getting that money into the hands of renters and landlords. That's the reason for the extension for this eviction moratorium as we still deal with the Delta variant. I also have reached out to the governor's office because that is going to expire at the same time that the Seattle one was going to. They have not made a final decision, but I would expect to hear something on that one way or the other in the next sometime this week.
You mentioned landlords as well, and one of the things that I have always brought up during our discussions about this is it seems like a lot is being done for the renters and maybe not as much for the landlords. So what happens to them in this case?
Well, basically what you'll hear is that this rental help, the federal dollars that we're waiting to get all up to speed and flowing nicely, is meant to help them as well. So this is going to benefit them both. But if you talk to the smaller mom and pop landlords who are sitting there, some of them struggling to get rent for many, many months now, at a certain point, it's too much for them because they had a little bit of a break from paying, like a pause on their property taxes way back in the beginning of the pandemic. Since then, not only have they had to pay property taxes, but their property taxes have gone up. And then, you know, there's the maintenance and the various other things that you have to do when you are a landlord to the property that they are still paying for. And for many of them, that is a struggle. Again, especially these mom and pop ones. And there are other restrictions and other protections for renters that are in place and at this moment being debated at the Seattle City Council that go even further than all of this in the long term that are, I've heard from the Rental Housing Association just yesterday, driving some landlords out of the city.
You know, Hannah, they've extended this moratorium 6 times, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of looking and going, all right, why now again? And I mean it in terms of what's going to be different in January. Like how much longer can we continue to do this? And what are we hoping is going to be different in January from now?
Well, what we're hoping is going to be different in January from now is that, one, you've got perhaps we've got a bit more normalcy just in general going on as far as COVID goes. But again, that those programs. So right now, King County has a rental assistance program that is funded through the federal dollars, as does every jurisdiction. But there is a lot of rules and a lot of bureaucracy and kind of red tape that comes with that. And it's taking a really long time to get it to flow very nicely so that everybody who needs that help is getting that help. So right now you've got renters who qualify for this aid, but they don't have it because the county systems aren't up and running. They had to do a whole kind of tech overhaul at the King County, particularly in King County, that has slowed that process down. But there are other jurisdictions that also have that same issue where it's not coming out as fast as it needs to be. So they hope that that will be different come January.
Hannah, we only have a couple of minutes here, but you and I off the air before the show were talking about how much the city of Seattle has been spending on the homelessness crisis just in the past year, because it seems like, you know, now we're hearing about this additional $50 million, half coming from the feds. What do we know about what has been spent and what is being done with that money?
So there is the announcement that we heard from Mayor Jenny Durkan yesterday about this $50 million going to open up 165 units of permanent housing for folks who are either exiting homelessness or young people who are on the verge of possibly becoming homeless. This is from the federal dollars, the last round of COVID relief, basically, that we got from the federal government, from President Biden. They had 130, I believe it was, the first, it's called the Seattle Rescue Plan, I believe, where they decided how they were going to budget those federal dollars for COVID relief. And this is a chunk of that money. But also part of this money is stuff that the state legislature did in this past session, putting a lot of money into the capital budget. It's it's a lot of legislative speak, but they put a really historic amount of dollars in there for housing to try to help with this situation, really, to some degree, for the first time in a really meaningful way when it comes to dollars for some of the local jurisdictions. So half city, half state, and backed by the feds.
And one of the things that I mentioned We need some kind of dashboard where we could actually see where all the money is.
And there is. You know what? I was trying to find it. I was trying to find it because I had found it right before we were texting. And there is specific for this Seattle Rescue Plan. And really, anytime you can go to the City of Seattle's Office of, I forget exactly how it's worded, the budget, basically, page. And when you go there, there's a link to everything that they do, what they spend on the housing levies, the various Office of Housing in general has all the lists of every different thing that they do all throughout the year. And they also have benchmarks, you know, how is it performing? How are things going? So you can go do that work if you so choose.
Okay. And then I know that people, for example, who live in Ballard or who live now in Pioneer Square are asking, when will our issues be resolved? When are we going to see some of those camps gone?
And it's going to be a bit, because the bottom line is we do not have the emergency shelter capacity right now to put to clear all of these encampments, to offer everyone a spot. And you have to be able to offer the people the spot if you're going to clear those encampments. That's why the Ballard encampment is still there. It's a priority, but there's no shelter space. So that's why that's another reason why the announcement yesterday on this $50 million is good, because that is permanent housing.
Yes.
And I know it's only 165, but when you put those folks in permanent housing, you free up whatever bed they were in. And
that's
in this case, it was tiny homes.
Hannah Scott, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
And this hour of our show is brought to you by Guardian Roofing and Pest Control. Still ahead, we hear ya and words to live by. This is the G and Ursula Show on Kyber Radio. Show. We are wrapping up now. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. It is our time for We Hear You when we share your feedback. And let's start off with you, Dres.
All right. Let's talk about Seattle spending $50 million on new housing for the homeless. From the 206, they say, the Seattle Times reported that 60,000 people are on the verge of being evicted. Homelessness is only going to grow. Wow.
On the topic of the second possible victim from that 15-year-old who's accused of killing the jogger, Phil in Gig Harbor says, my father was hit and killed as he was walking to the corner store. It was nighttime, 10:04 to be specific. I was walking out the front door when the car passed our house, screeched, thump, silence, screaming. Oh my God, I killed him. Call the police, call an ambulance, in that order. The 18-year-old who hit him was tuning in a radio station and took his eyes off the road. He was my age. I went to school with him. He went on suicide watch. My family walked down the street more than once to try and help him get through it. We did what we could to keep him out of jail, and it worked. This girl is the polar opposite. I hope this girl is tried as an adult and convicted. It has been 40 years since my dad was hit, and I'm crying as I type this, yet I still have no hatred for the boy who hit him. Leniency is for people who regret their actions, not for sociopaths who take joy in harming others.
Wow, powerful words. Scenarios. My parents are fully supporting my adult brother who doesn't work. What can I do? 602 says, I have a 45-year-old stepbrother. His mom pays the rent, the food, his kids' sports fees, his car payment. She works to cover his life. He flunked out of college. They paid for it. Lived at home into his 30s. It's the behavior, nothing the rest of us can do. Please, any parents of young children out there, let your kids succeed and fail on their own merit. Then, and you will be better off in the long run.
Yes, the James Beard Awards requiring a social justice commitment to win. 619 says, I love you, Dres. We cannot legislate goodness.
I appreciate that. 425 says, regarding the James Beard Award, we are in a time hypersensitivity regarding social issues. Why don't they give a separate award for extraordinary commitment to social justice? Like professional sports leagues, have a special award for the athlete who gives back to the community in so many ways. This athlete is not the MVP of the field, rather off the field. Great idea.
70% of millionaires are worried about leaving too much money to their kids. 425 says, I am worried about leaving too much money. We worked hard, saved like crazy, didn't buy new clothes, travel, cars, etc. And our daughters are from a generation of constant travel in lieu of saving. It doesn't feel good for them to reap the rewards of our sacrifice. Our goal is to spend our money as we wish in retirement and not purposely leave money behind. Hopefully they have a clue on that one.
I I hope that was a joke, because that was so weird.
I get it. I get it. Well, not for me, but I get it.
My goal is to not leave anything behind. I've never heard that statement. All right. Is it time to say goodbye to the bosses? 206 says, I was 30 years old, type of personality manager. I expected all my people to work as hard as I did. The ones that wouldn't hated my guts.
That one was interesting. I'm just going to go on because I'm going to go back to the last thing. Yeah, I don't know that you purposely not leave money behind, but you can. Anyway, everyone does what they need to do. Okay. Yeah. 253 says, I think the takeaway from this conversation is that excessive managers is bad and G is difficult to manage. We did not mention G one time in that conversation, just FYI.
We did not. We did not. We'll jump down to 206. The city of Seattle is overmanaged. I am retired manager.
Does height matter? 425 says, why does Ursula have to think of Chef as a tall person and not just as a quality person? Hey. Ursula is way too judgy.
See?
You're
taking shots at us. She was jet. Yeah, no.
No. I tell Chef every day what a quality person he is. I was just saying.
Yeah.
I was the one who said height does not matter.
Yeah, you say that while you're patting him on the head. I know what you do. From the 253 says, it's not just women. There are guys that won't date women taller than themselves.
There you go. That's so true, too. And then Rachel had one of my favorites. She says, I don't think I would even be identified in the morgue based off my info on my driver's license and how off it is. She said, I missed the last part of it. She says, LOL, at least I have blonde hair and blue eyes. Okay, time for our words to live by. And this is just a reminder to use your voice for kindness, your ears for compassion, your hands for charity, your mind for truth, and your heart for love. Our words to live by are brought to you by Pro Club, a club like no other.
What do you think of a person who only does the bare minimum?
Why do you want to alienate any person who is shopping at your store with any kind of buttons?
Well, I thought I remembered you saying that you wanted to express yourself.
It should be something that you want to do. It shouldn't be performative.
It's like we're trying to legislate love into the heart.
Yours is a quote of the day. Thank you, Dre's. You did a great job today. Thank you, Chef. Thank you, Andrew. And thank you to all who listen every day. We love you. We love that you're part of our community. And we'll be back tomorrow to do it again. Have a great day.